Welcome to OTF In Between, an episode that fits in between our normal OTF episodes. We'll be making these specials as needed, and today we have a need. We're going to talk about Windows 8, and we have two excellent tech experts to talk about it, that is, myself included. With me today is Timothy Keller from South Africa. Say hi, Tim.
Hello.
Tim, you're a software developer, a self-professed Mac. What would be a good word for that?
I believe fanboy is a bit of an inappropriate term, so I'm not sure what the politically correct phrasing for us is, but I use a Mac.
Put simply, he has a Mac, he has an iPad, he has an iPhone, and is preparing his next Mac purchase. To say that he's into the Mac world is a bit of an understatement. I have dabbled in the Mac world. I was a bit of a fanboy myself, and then I recovered. So I am a PC man to the bone. I do have game consoles, and I do know how to use iPod touches and iPhones, but I live in an Android PC world personally. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We started dabbling with Windows 8. Well, I did. I was thinking, hey, I'm going to reinstall Windows on my computer as I rebuild my computer this fall. I wonder if Windows 8 is at all usable. I've been hearing all this good stuff about the performance. I've heard some things that kind of reoriented how I looked at it. And I thought, well, I think I just need to jump in and try, you know, with both feet and install it and use it. And then I said, okay, I'm going to stick with it until I reach a point where I'm ready to rebuild the computer, in which case I will have made up my mind if I'm going to stay with Windows 8 and install it on the new machine, or if I'm going to go back to 7 and use that. And so this was my resolve, and my discoveries were actually surprising a little bit. But there's definitely some upsides and downsides to it. So let's talk about the install. When you installed, did you do it on a clean drive?
Yeah, so look, I've been running Windows 7 on my PC, and so while I do use Macs for work and for most of my computing life, I have a PC for the purpose of gaming. It runs World of Warcraft, it runs Diablo, and I've got an installation of Visual Studio 2010 on it for some coding that I need to do in Windows World from time to time. So I had a Windows 7 environment. And I could have upgraded it. I could have done an in-place upgrade. Probably would have worked fine. But I felt that it was time to do a bit of a rebuild. I think you blogged that you also felt it was time to do a reinstallation. And so I went out and got a new terabyte hard drive, put it in, and burnt the ice to a D and got started from there.
So the install, I would say, it takes about the same amount of time as a Windows 7 install from the point you start the process to the point you're in Windows. Would you say the same?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It may be a little bit faster for me, but my hardware's upgraded since I lost it as installation.
Well, there's also the fact that the process is, it's you're into Windows, but it's not done, you know, so it's kind of like, how far are you, I mean, are you using Windows, you know, how do I say this correctly?
Well,
to the point, from the point you stick the disk into the point you can actually start moving your mouse around is about
exactly.
Probably the same period of time, but in Windows 8, it gets to Windows pretty quick,
That's right. Then
it has to do some configuring, not the least of which includes the ability to link a Hotmail/Windows Live profile to it. I jumped in with both feet and went ahead and did that.
But
my Hotmail email is not something I use. It's something I log into Xbox and TechNet, but you know, like the Hotmail mail I don't care about. But I did a little refresh, which we'll get to later, which turned out that was actually kind of helpful. So after you get to the main screen, you land in the Metro screen. I mean, that's where you're going to go every time the computer boots up.
The Metro screen.
Yeah. Or we're going to call it Metro.
We are not going to call it Windows 8 style UI. We're not going to call it modern style UI. It's Metro.
Yeah.
Which is copyright Metro Group Incorporated.
Yeah, whatever. So this is the first time that we've had a major change that removed the start menu since the change that happened to Windows 95. But I think similar to Windows 95, this isn't actually a massive code base leap. I mean, 95 was a UI change, but it's underneath it was 16-bit/32-bit, which I believe Windows 3.11 was also. Am I incorrect, or is that right?
No, I think Windows 95 was a fairly major change. It was Windows version 4, if I'm not mistaken, under the covers, but not NT version 4, mind you. And as I understand it, Windows 95, while compatible with 16-bit applications, was 32-bit all the way.
Yes. So People talked about, I was listening to a podcast today, they were talking about how they re-enabled the program manager back in Windows 95 because they didn't like the start menu.
Right.
And I thought, well, man, is that what I've been this whole time? See, I can live, I mean, after thinking about it and trying it, I can live in the Metro-style interface without the start menu. However, I wish there was still a start button. Because I feel like the whole put your mouse in this mysterious space on the left side of the taskbar, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. It feels like they're cutting off the interface to say, you know, this is your legacy interface. You're the unworthy interface.
I absolutely agree. It's so disconcerting. And this is probably a muscle memory thing, and we're probably going to get over this. But it is incredibly disconcerting to be at the desktop and go, I now need to do something else. And I've just been hitting the Windows key on the keyboard. I cannot get into moving the mouse to the left or right of the screen and bringing those charms down. It's just, it doesn't work for me.
Well, the charms bit is something for to even more fun to get into. But my normal muscle memory of go to the left-hand corner, hit the start button is working. So it continues, but I also use the Windows key. I also know that sometimes you're a couple layers deep into Metro UI, like you've got a Metro app
yes.
open. If you hit the Windows key, it takes you back to the Metro screen, not the desktop. And you hit the Windows key again, I think it toggles back into the app. So you have to know when you're in Metro, Windows D to come straight to the desktop from whatever you're doing.
I didn't know that. Windows D to the gets you
yes.
to the classic desktop.
Yes. So, or hit the Windows key to get to the Metro display and then mouse to the desktop button and off you go.
Well, I just read today that Samsung is obviously prepping their laptops and tablets for Windows 8 on October 26th. And the current leak of the Samsung build of Windows 8 includes a start button, which launches
yeah.
this sort of weird Samsung-y Windows 7 clone thing.
Yeah, but the latest news on that is that they may not be doing that.
It seems like it would run counter to Microsoft's policies around this.
Yeah, but, you know, it's what people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. And the charms bar, they aren't familiar with. But some of this is going to be more accessible as you have a touch display. But then again, there's still a large install base of, like, desktops and laptops that are never going to be touch-enabled.
Well, this is the interesting thing. I mean, how long is it going to take until laptops, Windows laptops, ordinary Dell and HP machines, how long until those are coming with touch screens? And is that something that we're going to see? Steve Jobs famously, in announcing the MacBook Air and others, said it just doesn't work to have a touch screen on a laptop. We don't want to reach forward and touch a screen in front of us. Now,
I'm the same way. Like, imagine the ergonomics of like sitting at your desktop at work with
right.
your keyboard and your monitor and then having to reach up into the screen all the time. There's no way to ergonomically make that not wear on your body. So it just doesn't make sense outside of a small peripheral portable device.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And this is the interesting thing. You know, we're recording on the 1st of September, and a year ago today, Steven Sinofsky writes on the Microsoft, on the Engineering Windows 8 blog, the famous No Compromise essay. Microsoft will not compromise on anything. And it's an interesting essay to read now that we're running Windows 8, the release build, RTM build. Because really, to my mind, Windows 8 is nothing but a series of compromises. It's a compromise of saying we want to do a touch interface in the same OS as the mouse and keyboard-oriented OS, and we want to have a modern operating system while trying to keep as much backwards compatibility as possible. And it, to my mind, and we'll chat through this, I think, as we record now, but it just doesn't work. It just feels like one compromise built in another compromise. And it's an inconsistent experience. And I've got some examples. I've watched a couple of videos of people using it. And my wife, Amy's been trying to use it to play World of Warcraft. And there's some really strange inconsistencies with the way that the Metro and classic environments interact.
Yeah. That the way someone characterized it is that the classic desktop is an app inside of Metro. I think that that's a methodological way of looking at it, but it's not the reality, because
right.
if you get into the file structure, it's Windows. It's Windows as we've always known it. And Metro UI is a skin that pulls different things from different parts of the file system. If you ever open file location on multiple items inside of the Metro UI, you'll see that, you know, it's just places we've been and known before. This is NT version 6.2.
Mm.
to Windows 7's NT version 6.1. So this is an iteration of what essentially all started with Vista.
That's right. And I was actually surprised. I mean, I came into this expecting to have the same experience that I had when I switched to a Mac or got an iPad for the first time, that entirely new operating system feel. And actually, once I got through the Metro screen with its colorful squares, it was just Windows 7 without a start menu. They've cleaned it up. The new interface looks a lot better in classic mode. Aero never worked for me, and I think the new Metro styling is actually very elegant in classic. But it's this... this paradox of the Metro style interface and the classic interface that I just can't resolve at this stage.
I don't think... So my friend thinks that Windows 9 will be Metro full-time and there will be no classic desktop. I don't think that's going to be possible. I don't think we're headed there. I mean, I think Microsoft might think they are, but they will have a revolt on their hands, especially if they think they're going to push this into server OSs. There's no way that... server environments can live in a you can only see one window at a time operating system. It just can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like forcing the square peg into the circular hole. You know, go, damn it. I'm like, no, it doesn't fit. It doesn't work. And so long as this hybridization lives, I'm comfortable with it, using the start screen as a start menu. I do find some stuff annoying, though, like if you mouse towards the left and you get the task pane to pop up, and you mouse towards the right and you get the charms pane to pop up. This happens as I go between the screens of my display, because I have two displays.
Ah.
I don't like that. I kind of wish the charms would only come up on the rightmost display, unless I was in a Metro screen, which only allows me to use one screen. I like that the dual display, I have a taskbar on both screens. I can set the taskbar on the right screen to only show what's on the right screen, which is kind of cool. But I turned that off because it's kind of, I like the replication of the taskbar rather than the just what's on this side.
So. Does switching into the Metro start menu, for me, it really breaks what I'm doing. I'm busy working on something or I'm playing a game, and I hit the start menu, and suddenly you're in this different thing. Now, what's impressive is how smoothly it switches to it. If I've got World of Warcraft running full screen and I hit the Windows key, Metro fades in seamlessly. No graphics lag or stutter or anything. It's very impressive. But
you know they worked on that part.
Well, I'm sure.
Did you hear about the term MinWin?
Yes, the kernel optimization.
Yeah, so essentially to do with much less code and much less bloat what they were doing before, more or less.
And that work started with Windows 7, if I'm not mistaken.
It did, but I don't know that they called it MinWin back then.
Ah, right.
So the fringe benefit of having Windows 8 is the lack of overhead you have.
Mm.
My games are running smoother and faster than they were, and I have an apples-to-apples comparison on my system from, you know, running these games in Windows 7 and running them in Windows 8. There are some weird glitches, though. Things like, you know, flickering textures, which is probably a driver optimization issue that'll be fixed in time. I've had a game that I close that immediately restarts after I close it. I don't know why.
Mm.
And it'll do it up to three times if I don't nip it in the butt on one of the times it tries to open. But it is a Windows port for a console game.
Ah.
So, you know, so there's going to be some weirdness. There's always some new adopter tax that comes with trying something new like this and being on the bleeding edge. Thankfully, NVIDIA allows access to their beta non-WHQL drivers, so I can, you know, try a different one and see if that helps. And to some extent, it has. You were talking about... let's talk about Chris Perrillo's dad. I think that was a fun point. So that's an experience of putting a normal user in front of Windows 8 and, you know, okay, see how you use it. I believe he started him in the Metro screen and let him tool around. And then he hit something and landed in the classic desktop. It's like, oh, this is what I used to have.
Yeah. He hits the Windows Explorer icon in the Metro screen and he goes, oh, okay, this is what I've got.
So then he tries to go back to the Metro screen and for the life of him can't figure it out. Now, there are three ways to do it. You can hit the Windows key on the keyboard. You can hit what would be the start button, which is hidden, but it's the bottom left of the taskbar. And there's also, if you put your mouse in the bottom right-hand corner and get the charms menu up, you can hit the Windows key there. So there's three ways back. But none of them are visually revealed to you in the display. And that's the problem. I think that's the beginning and ending of the explanation why Windows 8 is so rough and it's going to be so rough for new users. It's simply not discoverable.
it's a huge problem because Windows is used not by the Mac nerds that are happy to learn new interfaces and just deal with the complexity along the way. Windows is used by everyone, a Windows PC on every desk in every home. And do I see my mother finding the start button? No, and I don't think she knows about the Windows key on her keyboard.
Most people don't. I mean, they were saying that they got rid of the start menu because most people weren't using the start menu. Like, but you've replaced the start menu with the start screen, which is sort of the same methodology, just kind of in a slightly more simplistic, flat layout. Because, you know, the start menu had menus and things that were embedded in it, like the programs menu, what have you. To wit, when you're installing programs on Windows 8, I don't know how many you have installed yourself, you get more Windows icons, classic icons, adding to your start menu.
Which looks now, terrible. Oh.
Which I was doing before. I was pinning things to my start menu because the embedded programs menu was not keyboard navigable for me, unless you use the search feature, which never, in my opinion, worked very well. The search feature works great in Windows 8, but I'm still kind of a UI man. The typing is just something more obscure that I need. So what I always did is I just pinned all the programs in the world I would ever want to use to the start menu. And I pin stuff I use constantly to the taskbar. And so the start menu isn't someplace I have to go a whole lot because everything I need is on the taskbar, by and large. And so my experience with Windows 8 is, by and large, the same as Windows 7. But I'm not your normal user.
Not at all.
And so what's going to happen to people, in my opinion, is they're going to get into that Metro screen. They're going to have nothing pinned like I do. They're going to be like, how do I get to the computer? How do I get to the C drive? Where's my documents? Where's my pictures? And there's really no graphical way to do it inside of the Metro UI, save maybe running the command line, which I think is much deeper magic than most users know.
Oh, yes.
So then they can go back to the desktop, and with the Explorer window pinned to the taskbar, they can kind of get there, but that feels clunky. It feels like a workaround that is missing something. So if I had my druthers, the Metro UI would have the option to turn on and actually have it by default on a list of the folders and things that you normally require that have been in the start menu.
Mm-hmm.
That would neuter some of the problem that there is with this, you know, where, how do I get to my stuff?
Mm.
So,
because right now it's either find the icon that was automatically pinned during installation or start typing. And again, this is the problem with Windows, Windows 8, I should say. There's just no discoverability. You don't realize that you can just start typing at the Metro start screen.
I mean, once you realize you can,
it's magic.
Cool. Because it's so fast and slick, but it's just like, how are people going to know this? And they said, well, they're adding a video to the beginning to kind of show them how things
well, that
work.
Always works.
But that's I don't know. So after, I should say that Chris Perillo's dad thing, it took him
a number of minutes
to finally find his way back to the Metro UI. I don't remember the time. I haven't watched the video lately. But
when I stopped watching the video, it was 4.5 minutes in, and he hadn't got out yet.
Yeah, I want to say it was a good 20 some odd minutes it took him to dig around to find his way back. And this is not the kind of friendliness that people are used to with Windows. But then again, like when I've worked with customers dealing with this in a tech support capacity in my previous job, one of the things I try to tell people is, you know, don't be afraid to like right-click on things or click on things or try things, because a lot of the stuff is sitting right there under the surface waiting for you to pop up to it. But on the flip side, one of the things I've always noticed with the ensuing versions of Windows is going from like Windows 95 to 98, 98 to 2000, because that was where I bridged, 2000 to XP, XP to Vista, Vista to 7. It seems like every time the things that I need to get things the way I want it, have always been kind of buried a layer deeper or changed just enough to be a little harder to get to.
Mm.
That has been my experience. To some extent, I feel like Vista was kind of silly with the way they did it. Like when you brought up the personalization screen, And you click on one of the things, the sub items in the personalization screen, and it brings up like the display properties window with only one tab. I was like, well, this wasn't really well thought out then.
you know what I keep doing in that screen is I'll go and change the desktop background, and then I won't realize that you have to hit save changes at the bottom. So I'll just close the window, and it reverts back to what you had before.
Now, I can see that as being a problem, but to me, I think that's a feature to me, because that way you can try it out and then not be committed to it.
But it, this is the modality of changing something, having a change in the interface, and you go, oh, it's changed, I'm done. And yes, it's a Mac way of, you know, working. Once you, once an action has taken hold of the system,
so many things do that. Like games do that, you know, the settings change and you'll hit escape. Did you want to apply that? I mean, that's probably the part that Windows needs to have,
yeah,
is have that error. Do you want me to apply the changes? But I think that's, I like the whole, like, I can futz with it and see the changes. I'm like, no, I don't like that. I'll just cancel it and it's gone, you know. So I was happy with what I had.
Catches me.
So, yeah. I don't know. On that part, we disagree. I do like that bit.
But I'm surprised that we agree so much on Windows 8 so far. I thought we would have a much more opposing opinion on this. I came into Windows 8 expecting very little. I had very, very low hopes, and my expectations were extremely low. And actually, on first glance, I was very impressed. I like new things. I like trying something new. But there's things that don't make sense. For instance, and I'm obsessed with this new Metro Start menu. Why do we need the Metro Start menu to take over the whole screen? Well, someone describes this really well. There's this guy who writes on a website called DEDOIMEDO. We'll put it in the show notes. But he says the best analogy that he can come up for the new Start menu is this. It's like going to a restaurant, and you're sitting at the table, and you're having your meal at the table, and then you decide that you'd like to take a look at the menu and order something new. Now, in the Windows 95 and 98 and up to Windows 7 experience, you just sort of pick up the menu and have a look at it, i.e. you click the Start menu and it appears over your work, and you spend some time looking at the apps and things you might like to order, and then it closes itself. In Windows 8, it's like crawling underneath the table and reading the menu written on the bottom of the table, and then kind of crawling back to your chair and telling the waiter what to bring you. It's this weird disruption to your workflow, which completely ruins my ADHD productivity, because as soon as I'm back in the Metro Start screen, I'm seeing my emails, I'm seeing the news coming through, I'm seeing my social stuff on Facebook and in the People app, and it takes me out of what I'm doing, and I find it very distracting.
What I see the Start screen as being is sort of like, and this is my usage, is it's sort of like giving you a tablet built into your computer, which that's what the live screens are. But I showed you the image of what mine looks like. It's kind of minimal. Like, I don't keep a lot of Metro stuff on my Start screen. So that you have that part. You also have the gadgets. Remember the gadgets from Windows Vista and Windows 7, those are gone.
Mm.
So that functionality has been absorbed by the Start screen. And so necessarily it has become bigger. In addition, you know, you can add the functionality to the Start menu before. Like, I have pinned computer, C drive, D drive, which is my backup drive, control panel, the various Explorer folders, documents, you know, my user folder, downloads, music, pictures, videos, all that stuff is pinned into a group. Because sometimes, I mean, yes, I can click on the Explore window from the taskbar, and yes, I can click on one of the items in there and get what I want, but I kind of rather just like tap the Start and then hit music and then go straight to music. I feel like that's a more connected way of doing it.
I can see myself loving Windows 8 on a tablet. I just don't know why I need a tablet within my desktop operating system. We've got big monitors. We can have multiple apps running at one time. Do we need to go into this other weird world?
Here's why. I've dealt with customers who have had Windows, they've had an iTunes install on Windows, and they go to the App Store and they start downloading these apps, not knowing that without an iDevice, you can't use these apps. And so this sort of gives you a usable experience for the apps in your computer without a separate device. So it adds the functionality of this peripheral right to your screen. Now, this is my way of viewing it. This is not saying this is what Microsoft means to do, because if Microsoft flips the switch with Windows 9 and Metro UI is all you can have, then we are screwed. Because I can't see it. And like Paul Theroux from Windows Weekly has said things like, he can't imagine Microsoft going forward without a desktop screen. And I sort of like, I want to make this like sound simplistic, but I think like Microsoft can't get rid of the desktop any more than they can get rid of the command line.
Yeah.
Because push comes to shove, that functionality kind of has to stay there. But I don't want to like compartmentalize it and make it sound like command line, on an everyday basis, I can exist without command line. But for like, you know, really powerful user stuff, I need it. I would say, like, maybe increase the percentage of how much it still needs to be around, and I would say the desktop still has to stay around for a certain functionality, in which case the integration between the Metro UI and the desktop still seems to be not hitting the mark for me.
Yeah.
And I think what I would like, and this is what I, if I could have my druthers, I would like the start screen to become a functional multi-sized menu. That's to say that it's as big as you want or as small as you want, but it could be compartmentalized into a start menu inside of the classic desktop if you're running a screen that doesn't have touch. And it'd be like if you start up your install and say, I've got touch or I don't have touch. So you don't have touch, it gives you the classic environment. Still have the start screen, still have access to the apps, but keep it more compartmentalized, not taking over the whole screen.
Totally agree. Makes complete sense, because we don't need it. We don't need two different interfaces. And the reality is that we can talk the classic desktop and as if it's the command line, but the reality is that besides us nerds, nobody goes to the command line. But for the majority of people, they're going to be working in the classic desktop. In fact, when they're running Microsoft Office 2013, they're not going to be in Metro. They're going to be in a classic sort of environment. I haven't run the trial yet, but from all the screenshots I've seen, there's a taskbar running along the bottom of the screen.
Well, there's also the theory that a lot of people are... sorry if I'm highlighting the document. There's a lot of people who are using their smartphones as their only computer slash web browsing item. It's a lot of people using tablets as their only way to get to the web, and they're just eschewing computers in lieu of these things. A lot of folks in the tech industry who exist in what I like to call the tech bubble say things like, you know, there's no way we can be without the traditional keyboard display interface type of deal, which, you know, I think Microsoft is championing with their new Surface device. But the problem becomes that people may en masse move away from this paradigm, and that's just what happens, you know? Like, a lot of websites are now customizing their content for mobile devices and tablets because they know that people are hitting their sites with that stuff and can't see their Flash content and what have you because the tablets can't do that. Mm. So there still may be... I mean, when I did customer service work for tech support, I would say 95%+ of the people can't handle if you try to put more than one thing on the screen at one time. They can't handle if you don't have things maximized. Mm. And sometimes you have to, like, get them away from the computer so you can actually work so they're not overwhelmed by all the stuff you do. You know, and my own father, I cannot break of this habit where he brings up his web browser, it loads the Yahoo homepage. I try to tell him, put this address into the address bar. Despite the fact that I say that clear as day, he puts it in the Yahoo search.
Of course.
And then he hits search, and then he can't find it. Oh, I can't find it. Like, it's because you don't have to find it. You put it in the address bar, it goes straight to it. There's so many customers don't know what the address bar is. They don't know. Yeah. They don't even know that Internet Explorer is called Internet Explorer. They just know that E goes to the Internet. You know, that kind of thing?
That's right.
So, like, there's a lot of different levels of, like, literacy when it comes to computers that may shape how things go forward. You or I are very clear and very much on the same page, but, you know, I understand that a lot of people aren't, you know?
So is Windows 8 an OS for computer people, for tech bubble people, or is it an OS for ordinary people?
I think it's like Microsoft always makes. It's their best ability to make it for everybody. And, you know, like the phrase goes, you know, Jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm. Well, we see this across the industry. I mean, we've just Mountain Lion on the Macintosh side of the world, and there's a lot more focus on an iPad-like experience. Applications can be launched in full-screen mode, where an application is the only thing running on the screen. The idea of Windows, physical Windows in the desktop metaphor, goes out the window. You can kind of do this gesture on the touchpad, which brings up an iPad-like view over the traditional desktop. So certainly Windows 8 is not kind of some weird thing from another planet. This is happening in all operating systems. Ubuntu Linux has done a new interface called the Unity, which, while not as revolutionary as Windows 8, certainly starts throwing away parts of the desktop metaphor that we had for much of the 19th and first decade of you know, the 2000s, the 21st century. This is a trend across our industry, and it surprises me because it's an interface metaphor that doesn't work for me. I need multiple windows, I need overlapping windows, and I need five things going on at once. to get my job done. But
there are times when I have 24 things over my screen, you know.
But is that what most people need? Could my dad successfully do his job at running a school with just one window on the screen at once? Can he just type an email and then change to another window and prepare a document and then go and work on a budget? Is that all right?
I mean, I don't know how your roads are in your country, but because you're in South Africa, but in the U.S., like, if you were to take the percentage of vehicles, you know, cars versus, say, large semi-trucks, you could make lanes on the road that fit cars but don't fit semis. Well, most people drive cars, but that doesn't work, you know. I mean, you can't apply a theory like that, you know, broad, you know. So there's some
weaknesses there. It's that backward compatibility issue. How long do we have to keep the lanes as wide as we've always had them? At what point can we cut off backward compatibility?
And as far as I know, never.
Yeah, well.
so that's Microsoft's bread and butter, is being compatible with the old stuff.
Exactly.
You know, to a certain extent, software moves forward, but I'm just not sure that the Metro UI methodology plays out outside of being a compartmentalized part of Windows.
So why don't we talk about Metro? Because, I mean, there's a lot to play with in Metro. You finish the installation, and I must say the installation experience is excellent. By a series of disastrous events, I had to go through two installations of Windows 8. I first installed the consumer preview, and then realized that was not the one
to
run.
Which I find very silly, because I linked you to the right one the first time.
I then lost the link and then just Googled for it, and of course the top link is the consumer preview. So we should say that we are both running Windows 8 RTM from TechNet. I think final Windows, which is the RTM, will be out on October 26th. And the installation experience is excellent. In fact, there's quite a difference in the experience from the consumer preview to the RTM. Some changed graphics, some changed styling, but overall a much cleaner and faster installation. But you land
there's a certain parallel. There's a certain parallel here with, like, Vista. Like, the first couple of versions of Vista, I was like, I don't know what they're thinking. This is not going to work. And then they sent me RC1, and I said, well, they sent it to me for free, so I'll just give it a whirl. And it was like, okay, this is much better. I can actually kind of live with this. And that's actually the same way I've approached this, too.
Totally. The new typography is delightful. Their font usage is really impressive, and it feels like a very polished product. The boot-up screen, the very understated and new Windows logo, it's all very good. And then you land up at this Metro screen, and it has the color background that you chose during the installation. The apps are populated, and because you've logged in during the installation with your Microsoft account, a whole lot of magic takes place before you even see the screen. So your email starts coming in. In my case, it already had my Facebook information in there because I'd done an installation before. Everything was ready to go. It detected the Xbox on our network somehow. It pulled through all the games. It's a very, dare I say, Apple-like experience of landing up in this new world.
Yeah, 7 was already leaning in that direction, which you know, I experience I'm familiar with from, like, my first Mac, which was a Tiger, OS X Tiger product, where you log in and you tell your name and the language and your wireless network name, and it's like when it jumps in, it's kind of ready to roll. And Microsoft is getting on board with this. I'm not sure where Apple is, because my last Apple experience was Lion, so I'm not sure where Mount Lion is, but this feels like it's kind of starting to get parity with that. But where it gets even better is an experience that you've kind of had. I screwed up my Windows install because I was looking to add custom icons to my Explorer folders to make my tiles more distinct in the Metro UI. And it works if you do it piecemeal, you know, one folder at a time. What I did is I ended up installing this Stardock app, which I should have run the other way as soon as I saw it was by Stardock. The icons it picked were distinct, but then a bunch of things weren't working right. Like, all right, I know what to do. I'll just undo it. So I undid it, put it back to default, but the icons were still broken. And I just, even changing the icons, like piecemeal like I did before, it wouldn't fix it. So I said, oh, well, I got to try this refresh feature. So I refreshed. What it essentially does is it takes your computer back to the way it was when you initially installed it. So no programs are installed, but your data is still there. That's the important bit. Even though I did update my backup just in case. So after I did that, I had to reinstall all my programs. But it was sort of like reinstalling Windows without the format, losing your data, and restoring your data part. So I accomplished in an hour and a half what would have taken me normally about 6 to 8 hours.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, that means, and again, we've got to see what happens once Dell gets their hands on this OS. But that means
that's
that
the problem. They're saying that they're actually going to be having that the OEMs will have access to it, which means that the refresh will actually put you back to their junky version of the operating systems.
Yikes!
So, but for most people, that's not an issue because they don't see the computers as we do. You know, where's the potential leanness that we can achieve, and therefore the speed that we get out of it. But on the other part of it is that logging in to that Hotmail account brought down all these settings and these preferences that I didn't have to remember to put back. It just did it. I checked things like, what is my work group name? Oh, it's still what I had it before. It's what are my sharing preferences? Oh, they're still there. It's just a lot of stuff was still there the way I had it. That was really nice.
Great.
Because that gets around, like, so all I had to do is just install my programs.
So that
takes
the question.
Saved me a lot of time.
If you've got two Windows 8 PCs, maybe one at work and one at home, or you've got a Microsoft Surface tablet and your desktop PC, will that same sort of integration be there? If you change your Metro background on the one device, will it change on the other?
There is an option to compartmentalize what the computer names are, but because my computer name and username were the same in this case, it pulled the same profile. I think that if you have a work computer and the work controls the name of the computer, you are not likely to get it. As a matter of fact, if in the case of the work, they may switch you to local-only profiles that they store on their server.
Mm.
So, you know, it would have the same benefit but wouldn't be in the same account.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little gotchas there.
As always.
So Arrow's gone.
Thank goodness.
So I don't miss it because of the overhead it added before. But I could never turn it off because I couldn't stand that baby blue nonsense.
Totally.
So now what they have is this, the part of Arrow that I wanted. I want to be able to control the color, so I can. The only thing I would change is that the inactive windows wouldn't always turn gray. They would turn to a lighter color, whatever color you picked.
Do you run it in the auto-sensing mode, or have you chosen a color?
I chose a color and customized it. I'm using a deep, dark blue at the moment.
I thought the automatic stuff was quite clever. I mean, it adapts to the color of your background and all. But yeah, in the end, I've also just chosen a color and stuck with it.
Yeah, for a little while, I was running this deep dark red, and I was going to leave it. And so it clashes with everything too much. And it kind of becomes its own entity, and it kind of gets in my face. I'm like, okay, I need to just, this needs to be understated. Now, some folks are going to turn, you know, as transparent as they can make it. The problem they're going to be unhappy with is you can't actually turn it to be, like, glass transparent.
Mm. That's fine.
And some people don't like that.
I never enjoyed Aero. I thought it was hideous. What I would do, and Paul Thurrott actually made the suggestion on Windows Weekly years ago, turn off window shadows. In Windows 7, there's these ugly sort of semi-transparent black shadows, but they're really heavy shadows behind every window. And it looks, to my eyes, really bad. And so I would always go into the registry and turn those off.
You know what's funny about that? If you stack a bunch of the same kind of window on top of each other, the shadows magnify.
Yes, yes. You get this like solid black border.
Yeah, so I kind of liked it because it gives you a certain sense of depth. But I think in the end of the day, everyone has arrived at the page where this isn't required to understand that the windows overlap and what have you.
Yeah.
So moving forward, you were talking about the Xbox integration. You like that bit?
It's good. I must say, in the consumer preview that I ran, it popped up and said, there's an Xbox on your network. Would you like us to connect up to it? And that seemed good. But I actually haven't got back to that that interface since installing the RTM. No. So do you know anything about the integration? Is there more than just here's the games that you played earlier today?
Well, I don't play a lot of games on my consoles. And usually when I fire up my consoles, the game I play is the update game, which isn't as fun as playing games. I'm sure you know, I mean, in the PlayStation, you can skip the updates and usually get to the games, but then if you want network features, then you have to complete the update.
Yeah.
The Xbox won't let you do anything until you complete the update. So in both cases, you kind of, you know, it depends on what you want to do. You're kind of hamstrung. So I sometimes just opt to shut them down rather than deal with that nonsense.
Mm.
So I haven't actually fired up the Xbox and attempted to connect it to the computer. However, I do use a DLNA sharing program on my computer called Tiversity.
Me too.
Mainly because the Windows sharing ability, which does work pretty good because you see album art and everything. That's really nice. But it has this like perception of what permissions I have about files that I have created. and I could never find what controlled or managed that permissions.
Yeah.
Diversity either sidesteps or ignores that and doesn't give me any kind of problems in those levels.
I think it ignores it. I also have no trouble with diversity at all. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And it just works.
The only thing I would change about diversity is if I could like figure out a way to get it to not bury things. And like I could, instead of having like folders and stuff, I could say, this is what I want the server to see.
Yes.
But not the case. So I sidestep some features that Windows has that to me are not fully developed. But this is always been the benefit of Windows, and to another extent what I find the benefit of Android is, if I don't like Internet Explorer, I can pick Chrome. If I don't like Windows Media Player streaming, I can pick Diversity, and so forth. Many different solutions, you know, you can pick what you want. But that's getting back to Windows here. You're talking about the you like the nice intro animation and color spin. Is that the startup or the install?
That must have been during the installation. I'm looking at my notes. I said, yeah. And these are my notes during for the consumer preview. But I just thought that besides a couple of weird resolution moments and the fact that when you start the installation, there's still this weird Vista-style Aero interface on the screen for the first couple of minutes. Once you get past that kind of initial bootstrapping process and actually into the sort of pre-Windows 8 world, it's very good. I think the greatest thing about Windows 8 is you can get going immediately. I landed up at the Metro screen and immediately jumped into the Mail app, into the Calendar app, into the People app, and there's a lot to see. Have you played much with that? I mean, those are sort of more consumer-focused things.
I don't have Facebook, so I don't have the People stuff.
Okay, well, let me tell you about the People interface. So you log in with your Facebook details, and you can log in with some other details as well. I've put my Twitter login in there. It's got my Windows Live stuff, obviously. And it sort of puts together this scrolling view of everything that happens on your social networks. So when I've got Facebook notifications, they pop up there. Any photographs that I post to Facebook are available in the Photos app and can be used as screensavers and backgrounds and what have you. It's not the way that I would choose to browse Twitter and Facebook. I would look for a dedicated app or just use the website. But as with so many things in Windows Phone 7 and the Metro interface, it's just a nice kind of dashboard of what's going on in your life. You can see the little pictures pop up when new emails come in. They sort of the subject scroll through the tile. It's a kind of high-level view of what's going on in your life. And the People app, the social network app, is just one of those things. Something that I found interesting about the People app is that it let me put my Twitter details in. And the internet has been up in arms over the last 2 weeks because, of course, Twitter renewed or reviewed, I should say, their developers' rules of the road, their application guidelines, which are now application rules or regulations. And one of the rules is that tweets can't be interleaved with other social network content. So you can't have a client, for instance, that shows you Facebook posts as well as Twitter posts. And so I'm not sure if Microsoft knew about this or whether they're going to do something about it. But right now, the People app in Windows 8 in Metro is not compatible with Twitter's new rules.
So is it doing something that it shouldn't at this moment?
Yeah, it's putting tweets in the same kind of timeline as your Facebook posts, which is against their rules. But until they get rid of it, until they have to pull that, it's a useful app.
Well, until it's like in the public hands,
yeah,
and Twitter really starts seeing it, I guess it won't be an issue.
So,
have you tried the new Task Manager?
I have. So jumping back into classic mode, I guess you can't run Task Manager in Metro, I assume.
Nope.
Okay, so I've fired it up. Was the first app I launched in Classic. Very impressive for nerds like us, being able to break it down and see really sexy graphs of CPU usage and memory usage. And for the applications, I'm not sure how much has really changed, but it just looks a whole lot nicer.
Yeah, I really like that there's information, detailed information, like, you know, my processor does the Turbo Boost.
Yep.
Have you heard of that?
I have.
Where the iFis will go higher than their stated clock speeds up on demand.
If they're not
which I like.
All, is that if not all cores are used, right?
I'm not sure how what the rules are, but I just I just saw a spike when it went to 3 gigahertz for whatever something needed it. It gave it to it, but it also shows me like L1, L2, L3 caches, information you can't get from like system properties. Mm-hmm. You know, I can see, you know, like you said, the graphs for the memory, the disk, and what have you, which I think is very nice. The processes are broken into apps and background processes. Yes. It's easy to just like little drill down, so you can see dependencies on certain things, which I like. The app history talks about Metro apps only, and that's when I discovered that Bing was still on my computer, and I took that off.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what the Bing wants to do, but I want it off.
Yep,
and so getting back to the Metro apps, Chrome, when I saw Google Chrome, I think I had to tell it twice to become the default web browser. When it does that, the Internet Explorer disappears from the Metro space.
Which is a wonderful thing.
Now, my understanding up until seeing this happen was that Internet Explorer was immutable in the Metro space. So I like that this is what we've decided to do. And it might be something like the EU, you know, because they want people to have options besides Internet Explorer, which makes me wonder how the EU hasn't gotten all up in arms about Apple's Safari on their iOS devices. But because there's no way to change the default browser.
There isn't.
You can add other browsers, but you can't like make links go to those other browsers. They have to go to Safari. So
yeah, something's going to happen. Look, the only reason Microsoft has to deal with that in the EU is because of the antitrust ruling that came whenever that court case was wrapped up. But that, it's a direct outcome of that. And I guess until Apple has the monopoly and abuses that monopoly, they're not going to run into the same problem. But I also installed Chrome and was amazed when Internet Explorer just stopped appearing. There are some caveats. Something interesting happened with our use of Chrome. So I was working at my wife's computer. She's got an iMac, and she was working on mine. And in fact, she was trying to play World of Warcraft. It was a new patch this week. So she goes off to curse.com to download the client that downloads add-ons so she could get her add-ons up to date. And so the EXE installer downloads in Chrome, and now she's in Metro mode doing this download. And she clicks the EXE to launch the installation application, the installation installer thingy. And of course, in Windows 7, you would expect that window to now take the foreground, and you could immediately get on with the installation. Well, nothing happens on screen. She's still in Metro. She's still in Chrome. Something's happened in the background because Chrome's indicated that the download has been launched, but there's no visual indication on the screen. So I suggest to her that she goes back to the Metro screen by hitting Windows key, which she does, and then goes to the classic desktop. But upon clicking into the classic desktop, she's returned to the game World of Warcraft that she was running. So now she has a problem. If she hits the Windows key, which would usually kind of boot you out of the game and into the Windows shell, well, this time it sends her back to Metro, where she came from. So she's now in this kind of weird twilight zone where she can't get back to the classic desktop, and all she can do is get back to Metro. And the only way to get to this cursed client installer was to get back into classic, which is running the game, go into the options for the game, switch it out of full screen mode into Windows mode, drag that window out of the way, and there was the installer running behind the game.
Assuming the game hasn't disabled it, because some games do, the Windows D key would have done that.
Right.
Of course, most users don't do that, and you didn't know at the time either.
I didn't know about that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. The Windows D has worked for a while along those same lines. You know, even in classic desktop, Windows D will take you to the desktop display. It doesn't minimize stuff. What it does is it brings the desktop forward.
It's like a hide.
Treating the desktop like a window brings it on top of everything else, so you can access the desktop, which is necessary for all the little idiots and their desktop shortcuts.
Yeah, that would have done it. That would have solved it. Now, I don't know if that was a Google Chrome issue. I don't know if it was just a bug in Windows where it's not expecting Chrome to be the default browser, but there was some breakdown there.
It could be Chrome. It could be the way Microsoft requires Metro apps are able to interact with the computer.
Yeah.
And to me, one of the things I liked about Chrome, when it creates a Metro app, it is, for all intents and purposes, the desktop Chrome just maximized. So the little wrench is there for the settings, the tabs are there, all the graphical goodness that you're used to being there is there. Because if you use the Metro IE, you're like, what the hell is this?
I couldn't find the tabs. I'm just in this full screen hell, and I'm like, where are the tabs? I think I had a right click to get the tabs.
I think you right click and they come in. I actually haven't used it since I installed Windows 8 on the computer, because one of the first things I always do is put in Chrome, and Chrome took over, so I haven't had to deal with it.
But that, again, it's the discoverability issue. So I'm using the Mail app, and I'm thinking to myself, right, well, how do I, and mail comes through, I want to forward it to someone. How on earth do I forward this email to somebody? There's no menu bar along the top of the screen, so I can't kind of dig through that. There's no way to search a help guide or anything. And so
That's probably where the swipe in from all sides of the device would work.
So I head over to the charms, nothing there. There's a few settings. Eventually, I realize that there is actually a reply button. It doesn't look like one. It's sort of a circle. And when you click reply, it doesn't reply. It drops down a menu, and one of the options is forward. But especially in mail, there's this kind of just blank screen, and you don't quite know where the text area is to put your cursor in and start typing. It's just this kind of open space. And yeah, on a touch device, you would just kind of jab your finger at the screen where you want to type. But on a desktop, it's jarring.
Yeah, that little menu is silly. Since that space is all unused, only putting three icons there, it seems kind of silly. I kind of like the Mail app and its simplicity, but it's not going to scale well on a smaller display.
I find the white background overwhelming. I'd like to switch, maybe invert that black background.
Oh, I've always had that caveat in almost every app that does this kind of stuff, but you know, I very infrequently have that. There's two sites that I'm noticing that, like Ars Technica and Game Informer, now have the switch it to black option. I'm like, thank you,
wonderful,
so much easier on my eyes. And I immediately after I change the site, I feel my eyes go So the Mail app, I don't use Hotmail, so the Mail app hasn't gotten a lot of use out of me. I mean, I've tinkered with it, and I forget the thing I was trying to change is I wasn't showing all my messages, and I knew it wasn't showing my messages because I know I had like 7 or 8 messages, and it was showing me 3. Why is that? I don't know. Well, what happened is, and Google does this too on Android by default, they only show the last 30 days worth of messages.
Oh.
So I had to right-click, go to Charms, go to Settings, and then find wherever the setting is, I can't think of it off the top of my head, and tell it to pull all mail, not just the last 30 days. And then it went ahead and did that. So it was annoying that I had to dig. It's one of those things, like, I don't like having to look up something as mundane as, show me all my mail.
Oh, yeah. Well, I put both my work Google Apps account and my personal Gmail account in, and it seems to work quite well. I'm battling to archive email. There's no notion of dragging messages to folders, as far as I can tell. So archiving's not working for me, and sorting into folders doesn't seem to be working either.
The control click and the shift click both work there. So
really?
I don't know about how you move stuff.
Okay. So I didn't know that you could control click or shift click.
And I assume that on a touch display, it would be like Android, a long hold would select it, a long hold, the next one would select it, which in case it would be like annoying to do on a touch display rather than easy to do on a desktop display. But you know, it depends on how much into the shift and control have analogs in Mac, so you know that, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I think for anything that was control in Windows, it's command in Mac.
That's right. Well, there's also control in Mac. I mean, it's inconsistent because on Mac...
No, I know there is a control key, but like if it's control C,
command C.
It's command C.
Yeah,
command.
You got it.
Yeah. So, I don't know how well I was with the keyboard shortcuts. That's one thing I wish Microsoft would do that Mac has done. There's a place to go in Macs where you can see all the keyboard shortcuts.
Yes. It's a huge menu.
And I want that in Windows. I mean, why doesn't that exist? It's there's not even like an easy guide to find them, and it's even more problematic when, say, you're in Office in the new interface and you can't find anything. Because if it's something simple like, you know, I need to create a table, that's easy to do with the ribbon. But if it's like, how do I change the keyboard shortcut? Oh, good luck on that one.
Now, what do you think of the ribbon in the new Windows Explorer?
I kind of like it. I used to get sick of having to dig through those menus before. Now I have it hidden by default like I would in Office, where like you don't see anything except File, Home, Share, View
at
the top of those words, and I click them. So I treat it like a menu. except instead of popping up a box that I have to change tabs, I can pick one of those items and immediately have everything showing.
Yeah.
But it's more complex than it was before, and some of this stuff is going to be difficult for new users when they'll see all this stuff and say, what does this do? And they'll start messing with it, and things that they don't want to happen will happen.
Yeah, I was blown away at how much there was under the kitchen sink.
I like it, though. But if you check, like, you know, hidden items, because this happens with customers all the time. Now I have all these stuff showing. What is this? Where did this come from? And they'll try to delete the hidden items, and they shouldn't be deleting the hidden, you know, stuff like that. So I see a lot of the nightmares for the people who have to support this for folks.
It's going to be rough.
So where do we leave off? We got Task Manager.
We kind of segued out of talking about Metro apps. So let me give you a few other things I've done in the Metro apps. I went off to the store, so I saw there was a little 7 on the store icon last night, so I jumped into the store, and indeed there were updates. And they weren't just updates for the apps that I've downloaded from the store, and I'll talk about those now, but there were also updates for the built-in applications. So there was an update for mail, there was an update for news and games and weather, and that was impressive. I expected those to come out via the Windows update mechanism. And I thought it was nice that Microsoft built those in.
Yes, I did too. But also, it feels like Android does to me, and I don't know if iOS does this, but you're like, I'm letting Android install all the updates. Whenever they come around, go ahead
just
and do it. So at some point, my phone will buzz, and I'll look at it like, oh, I just installed 8 updates.
5
and
updates on 3G.
I hope and things haven't changed greatly. Well, if I'm within reach of the household, it's on Wi-Fi.
It's a setting.
I like that. I like that it maintains the update. But the only time that comes a problem, and I hope this doesn't become a problem, is I had IMOIM. You know what that app is?
Oh, it's like a cross-platform instant messenger.
Yes. It updated, and there was a default update, and it completely changed the UI. Completely different than it was before. And it was different on the tablet, and it was on the phone, and I'm like, I don't even know how to sign out now. And I seriously can't. I'm sitting there for like 15 minutes getting mad at it. I'm like, I can't find the sign out. And the sign out was under the me option, which to me didn't make sense.
Yeah. That's Android. It doesn't make sense.
Well, but it did until that point. And I can't blame Android, I can blame IMO. But that's the kind of thing I hope that Microsoft doesn't pull one of those. We're like, you know, we're going to substantially change this application and then update it, and you'll be like, oh, I'm just getting updates for security or whatever, and then like they won't know how to use it anymore.
So I guess the question then is, what's the distinction now between Windows Update and the Windows Store update mechanism? What'll be...
I think they're completely separate apps, as far as I know.
So security updates and stuff will come through Windows Update as per usual, and then any applications in the Metro environment will be via the Windows Store.
As a matter of fact, if you type Windows Update, type it right into the Metro space, nothing happens. You find nothing.
Really? I thought I found it. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so you can pin stuff to the start screen from your desktop, and... as such, I've pinned the control panel, which gives me access to Windows Update.
What I thought was interesting is, you know, if this interface, Metro interface, is the kind of one interface to rule them all that new users should use, I found it really interesting that upon installation, I got pulled into the classic desktop and shown the Activity Center, or whatever it's called, and it had a whole lot of issues for me to resolve. I think I needed to get some drivers, something else hadn't worked out, and there was this kind of technical list of stuff that I needed to deal with. One of them was to run Windows Update.
Yeah, I like to get into Action Center and tell it to stop bitching about certain things, you know.
Yeah.
I want the firewall, and I don't care. I'm at home, and I'm protected by my router, and I don't need the firewall. So.
Exactly. There's just more of those rough edges. Can we assume that the version of Windows 8 that you and I are running now is what people are going to use come October 26th?
I would assume that, but there is the possibility they'll update something or change something along the lines based on feedback. I haven't been not given the opportunity to give feedback, because I would be all over that. But in any case, the short and the long of it is I can live with it the way it is, but there are definitely some little gotchas. So you talked about the store.
Yeah, so I downloaded a couple of apps. The one app was the remote desktop app, which is odd because remote desktop connection is built into Windows 8 already, and it launches you into the classic environment. But what the remote desktop app in Metro does is the same thing, but in a kind of Metro environment. And it actually works for me a lot better than the classic one.
The Another keyboard shortcut you may not know.
Oh, yeah?
Windows Q.
Yep.
Searches in any Metro app.
Ooh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So for me, that would be like quit in Macworld, but I'll try that. Windows Q.
Yes.
I also downloaded OneNote MX. So it's the free version of OneNote, not the the full one that comes with Office 2013. Not for me. I've got my notes kind of in various places, mostly text files. But a great app, well designed, beautiful interface, nice intro video, and I can see a lot of people really enjoying OneNote MX.
I haven't downloaded any apps at all. I take it back. I downloaded Crack.com.
I saw that on your blog post.
And I kind of liked it because it's like the videos that are embedded in Cracked, which use Flash on the website and always run like shit, actually run great.
Of course,
right here in the Crack.com app. However, you can see the Crack.com app is trying to use the default resolution that Windows 8 expects, which I believe is 1366 by 768.
Yep.
And so it fills just a little over halfway mark on my screen. Because I've got this big old margin at the bottom. But,
it's interesting. In terms of resolutions, Windows 8 just wants a 1024768 display. That'll work fine. But you won't be able to do certain things in Metroland. Like you won't be able to, as I understand it, pin things to a side of the screen. Is that what it's called? Metro Pin, Metro Peak, something like that? Where you stick an app to the side of the screen.
I don't know what you're talking about. You mean the put two apps on the screen at a time?
Yeah, that's it. So you've got to have a minimum resolution of that 1366 by 768.
Which makes sense. I mean, if you pin one to the side of the screen, like say like the weather one,
yeah.
You can pin it, I think, even in the Metro screen. No, I guess you can't. You have to actually be in another app. So let's see. Go into Photos and then tell weather to snap right. And there we go. Now we've got weather on the right and my photos on the left.
That's it. I didn't realize initially that you could snap a Metro app to the one side and then have the classic desktop in the other space. And I thought that was quite cool.
That is kind of nifty, except for the rearrangement of that does of your windows. But then I guess that sort of makes sense because there's a security concern involved in it. The snap, running the multiple windows is so that the code can't intermingle.
Mm.
So there actually is a security consideration protecting people from each other. That task switcher on the left is navigable by Windows Tab.
Yes.
Which you might want to know.
Yeah, I noticed that. Alt Tab still works, and it kind of tabs through both classic apps and Metro apps.
Yep. So to some extent, it's kind of slick how they put it together. In other cases, like you're surprised how unslick it is because other places are. I really like the pictures thing.
The Pictures app in Metro.
Yes.
Right, so what have you got in it? I've hooked in my Facebook and Flickr and whatever else it offered me.
Meanwhile, I've turned all that off.
Did you get your Google Picasa stuff in there?
No, but my Google Picasa pulls from the same folders that are on my computer, so this pulls from the folders on my computer, so I get the same stuff.
Okay,
so
cool.
I worked hard to unify my experience everywhere I go. Have you noticed that the scroll bar on your mouse actually scrolls horizontally?
Yes.
In Metro stuff.
Thank goodness.
It would have been difficult if you had to like get a little hand like on a PDF file and throw it.
And initially it's kind of disconcerting because you arrive at an interface and you realize that vertical scrolling doesn't exist in Metroland. I suppose it kind of does in limited circumstances, like in the mail app where you have to kind of just go up and down a page. But in the majority of the applications, like the contact or the people app, I should say, when you start scrolling, you're just going to scroll through all your contacts. And that's a very long horizontal scroll.
Well, there's also a feature in the start screen that allows you to show more tiles, so you can have a taller tile border, which I think it already automatically adds more based on your resolution. I turned it off mainly because I'm just used to the size that I have here, which is already more than most apps show. Like most Metro display pictures will show you only about three rows worth of apps.
Yes.
Whereas I have six.
Oh, a lot more. Oh, yeah, 1080p.
Yeah, so What else do we have here? I haven't tried Office 2013, so I can't talk about that yet.
Neither have I. I've looked at a lot of screenshots, I've looked at reviews. What I'm reading is a nice update, brings the Metro style interface, but I can't tell whether it's running as a Metro application, whether it's running in classic mode. My assumption is that on Windows RT, on the Microsoft Surface and other tablets, that it'll run in a sort of semi-Metro mode.
Here's this thing, though. I have the new Windows Essentials 2012 or 2013, whatever it is, installed. So it has the Flutter UI, the Flutter Windows UI. Is that Metro style?
Right.
So Metro style doesn't mean that you have to be the Metro display.
This is the thing. I mean, it's so muddied because when as a developer and you decide to build an app for Windows and you build it in the Metro style, what is the decision point that you make between whether you want it to run in the kind of full screen Metro start interface and when you want to run it in the classic interface?
Yeah, see, we're asking questions we can't answer until it finally hits the public and stuff. So
it's going to be it'll be interesting to see what people do.
Having said that, I had Handbrake installed on my computer, and I updated to a nightly build to get a new feature that isn't present in the public release builds. And the new version looks Metrofied, if I can say it that way.
Metrofied, but running in the classic environment,
but
of course.
Running, yes, yes.
So exactly. I suppose the question is, why would you build for the Metro start menu style when you could just build a traditional Windows application, and I assume the development tool chain is different. It seems to me that the Metro style applications are a lot more sort of HTML5, CSS, JavaScript style interfaces.
I would say there should still be a break of, you know, the powerful applications that real users need versus the simple applications that the novice users need. Yes, there's a market for the novice user simple applications, but I still think we should still have our classic environment because we need beefier hardware or beefier software to do certain things, not the least of which is gaming.
Right. And when it does a great job for gaming, yeah, there's some driver things here and there, a little bit of rough edges, but we're 2 months ahead of the release of this operating system, and it already works exceptionally well.
Yep, and everything's faster than it was.
Significantly, I'm getting higher FPS in almost everything I've thrown at it.
Yeah, I haven't actually quantified it, but I can see it. Like I have the high detail texture pack for Skyrim, and I've added some mods to it to add more foliage and more details to some of the towns, which adds more limitations in the frame rates, and it hasn't chugged even once. I was having a problem with a random. In Windows 7, and I couldn't pin down what it was. There was just randomly, in all games, my system would kind of chug and just slow down for a split second and then go back to running just fine. So I knew that I had something wrong with my install. So only Windows 8 fixed that as well.
So it's 2 months to go until the release of this. What is going to happen when this hits the market? I think with Vista, which was the last major interface change, we kind of knew that things were going to go badly. I don't think we knew quite how badly it was going to go, but it was a difficult process getting Vista out the door. Longhorn was chopped down, and development was restarted at least once during that development process. Mm-hmm. And the Vista we got was still very rough. Windows 7 came out and kind of fixed a lot of the problems. So the question is Windows 8 a refinement, an enhancement of Windows 7, or is it a Windows Vista-style reimagining of the Windows interface? And what on earth is going to happen when this thing hits the market at the end of October?
It's really hard to you can't compartmentalize it like that because it's the picture is just not as simple as that. I mean, there's going to be a lot of different things. Like there's going to be new devices that have styluses. Samsung calls it the S Pen. There's going to be...
The what pen? Sorry?
The S Pen.
Oh, the S Pen. Okay.
Yeah, which one of the tech podcasts I was listening to called it the Spen. there's going to be different size displays. There's going to be different approaches. Samsung may or may not install a start menu to leave a more familiar element to Windows to people who may need it or want it. the form factors are going to be different across a wide range of devices, and I think there's going to be a certain amount of like everyone getting their sea legs as what they actually want or need. And Apple came out with the iPad and really hasn't deviated from the style they created originally yet, but they're rumored that they're going to. Samsung has been throwing a lot of stuff at the wall. Like they've got the Samsung Note phone, they've got the 6-inch tablet, the 7-inch tablet, and the 8.9 that they retired, and the 10-inch, and like everyone's kind of just trying to figure out what's the sweet spot, what do the customers really want, or what markets don't exist that we can create. And the Windows tablets will also be split into the full code base versus the RT code base, which is set up for ARM, if I'm correct.
That's right, yes.
So there's just, it looks like it's going to be even more of a clusterfuck than we have even previously theorized. And the more aware of it you are, I mean, I keep on top of tech, and it's kind of like when you tried to follow the Intel processors back in the Pentium 4 days. You just couldn't. After a while, we changed sockets a couple of times. They changed front side bus a couple of times. They changed architectures inside of the same socket a couple of times. The Pentium 4 shouldn't have been called the Pentium 4 as long as it was called the Pentium 4.
No.
Then we went to the Core 2, and it seems like the Core 2 kind of came and went really fast, and then we're in the i-series processors.
And we seem to kind of be stuck on the i-series as well.
But it's not a bad processor to be stuck on.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, Intel still calls things Pentium. They're still Pentium processors. And it's like, if you really want to stay on top of hardware, it's impossible.
Mm.
And I think we're going to have a similar problem with the Windows 8. It's like, you'll think you'll have some sense of where we're at, and then someone will throw a wrench into it. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I was originally predicting, if Windows 8 released in the state that I found it in that first trial, which I forget the name of it, but it was before the release preview, it was the one before that.
Mm-hmm.
If it had released like that, absolutely no holds barred, I was not going to touch it. It was not functional. You couldn't use it, especially with a mouse. The interim one I played with in a virtual machine still didn't quite like it, but I could see how it, you know, could in a limited way become useful. This RTM version is actually livable. So it's almost an exact same pattern that I followed with Vista, the first two versions. I was like, what are they thinking? There's no way I could use this. There's nothing I can use this for. And then they gave me RC1. I'm like, oh, okay, this is not too bad. So I don't know, but I am looking forward to figuring it out.
It's going to be really interesting. I must say, I can get my head around this thing because I've been using computers for a while, and I can understand what they're trying to do and where they're trying to get towards, but I think this is just going to be an unmitigated disaster when it hits the market. The headlines are going to read, Microsoft has lost...
For normal users, probably.
For normal users, and that's Microsoft's customer base. Yep, the business guys are going to be fine. They're going to group policy edit this thing, and they're going to have, I don't know, Enterprise is going to make Windows 8 work for them. If indeed they want to go to it, maybe they're going to just bounce it like they did Vista. Windows 7 is still a very viable operating system for big enterprise.
It's entirely possible.
Who does that leave? That leaves the consumer. And
like you said, they could group policy. They can lock it down so the user can't change them. They can just hide all the Metro apps. And so to them, the start screen is nothing but a launch screen for everything you have. Essentially, a desktop full of shortcuts.
And
they can't lock you out of the start screen because Microsoft has made it very hard to do that.
They have. I just feel that the correct approach for the next couple of years remains two interfaces: a tablet-style interface, by which I mean a touch interface, and a desktop interface. And the merger of the two into this kind of two-headed dinosaur is not going to work in the market. And I'd actually love to be proven wrong, because I'd love to see this new metaphor, this unified metaphor work, because I think a lot of people would like to see what Apple could do with a unified OS X, OS X, and iOS interface. But I don't think Windows 8 has it all right.
Do you think that Apple would be headed in that direction? I mean, there is a certain amount of like OS X that now echoes the iOS design methodology.
And I think they'll continue with that approach. I think iOS will continue to gain the very best parts of OS X, and I think OS X will continue to pick up some really great innovation that's happening on iOS. But
I like the way they compartmentalize, the way that the iOS-like features in OS X. To put it simply, for those who may not be as literal to this, the iPad-like interfaces, as far as the MacBook interfaces, adding those interface items to the MacBook allow you to have access to them in a certain way without having to completely flip it into a tablet.
That's right. And that's the way it works. We use different devices based on where we are. I don't use my iPad when I'm sitting at a desk. I use my iPad when I'm sitting at a coffee shop or on the couch watching TV. And I appreciate the iPad interface, the one window interface in that environment. But when I'm at a desk, I need my computer and I need windows and I need multiple tabs open. I need to see my tabs. And the trade-offs and compromises, and I do use the word compromises, the compromises that they've made in Windows 8, I don't believe are the right choices. And it's easy for me to just sit here and say these things. I didn't have to design the interface or write the software.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to see problems in the market.
There could be a lot of stories behind this. I mean, I sense if you look at the math, I mean, the Windows Phone hasn't taken the world by storm. Based upon that success, we'll take the interface methodology that we put into it and put on everything. What? How do you get from A to B on that one?
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so this may be, you know, the baby of somebody who has some say at Microsoft. But in any case, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in the future. So with that, I think we'll wrap this up. Thank you for attending with me, Timothy.
Absolute pleasure.
So I will talk to you later, and thank you for listening to OTF in between.
Good.
A little bit of muscle memory there.